Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. I'm your host, Dean Abbott. Wesley J. Smith is a writer keeping a close eye on the global threats to human exceptionalism. He joins me now to talk about a new push toward euthanasia happening in Canada. Welcome to the show, Wesley.
Thank you, Dean. How are you doing?
Good. Someone recently sent you a pretty disturbing photograph from a Canadian hospital. Can you describe that for us?
Yeah, because I do a lot of writing on these bioethical issues, human exceptionalism issues, I have people send me things from literally all over the world. And a source who I think should remain confidential in a hospital in Canada where euthanasia, lethal jab euthanasia is legal, sent me a photo that this source took of a PR advertising of the kind, you know, that you see in waiting rooms with a big screen television. And this is what it said: medical assistance in dying, parentheses, MAID. Now, that's euthanasia. Medical assistance in dying, or MAID, M-A-I-D, is the euphemism of choice for the euthanasia movement, because they don't want people to really associate with what is being done there. You're talking about homicide by doctors of sick and disabled patients. That's what MAID is. So we're talking about euthanasia. Then the text says, MAID is a legal medical service in Canada whereby physicians or nurse practitioners help eligible patients fulfill their wish to end their suffering. And then it gives a phone number to call. Now realize there was nothing in this advertisement or this PR push for euthanasia in the waiting room of a hospital where people may be sick, they may be scared, they may be in pain. There was nothing discussing hospice care for people who might be dying, and of course terminal illness is not required for euthanasia in Canada. There was nothing about palliative care to ease symptoms. There was nothing about suicide prevention. There was a PR promotion of euthanasia for people in a waiting room in a hospital. And my source was so appalled by this, because it wasn't just saying, yes, we allow euthanasia. It was pushing to normalize euthanasia at a hospital that she sent me the photo. And so I decided that it was of such concern, I would write about it at National Review on the corner, which I did. And I have to say, that's one of my posts that's gone viral, because it demonstrates how far Canada has already fallen in just 3 short years from when the Canadian Supreme Court imposed a legalization across the country of euthanasia to now, where you actually have the medical establishment promoting it as a means of dying.
So terminal illness is not a requirement to receive a physician-assisted suicide in Canada.
It's not physician-assisted suicide. It is lethal injection euthanasia. In physician-assisted suicide, the person who dies takes the last act that causes death. In what we're talking about in Canada is a doctor committing homicide. That is a doctor giving a lethal injection to the patient. It's on request, but it's not suicide. It's homicide.
Ah, so the doctor's actively involved in basically...
They caused the death. They literally kill the patient.
So what is required to receive that kind of treatment in Canada if it's not terminal illness?
Well, what the Supreme Court said was that if a patient has a medically diagnosed condition that causes irremediable suffering as the patient defines it. Now, meaning this, that if there are ways to alleviate that suffering, but the patient does not wish to receive those means of alleviating that suffering, the suffering will still be considered irremediable. So let's assume, Dean, that somebody has cancer that's causing pain. Morphine would reduce that pain to a tolerable level, but the patient says, I don't want to take morphine. Then that pain is still considered irremediable, even though it is completely relievable, right? Also, the Supreme Court said specifically that it is not limited to people with terminal illnesses, and that the suffering that is deemed irremediable can include psychological pain, which opens the potential for mental illness to be a euthanizable, if you will, condition, as, by the way, occurs in the Netherlands and Belgium, where mentally ill people are killed by psychiatrists because of suffering. And of course, mental illness often has excruciating existential suffering, much more than a physical illness. So after the Supreme Court imposed a nationwide euthanasia right, it's not just legalization, it's actually a right to access it. The parliament actually has a means of pushing back on the Supreme Court of that country called the notwithstanding clause, where they could have filed, passed a law that said, notwithstanding what the Supreme Court said, this is not going to be legal for a period of time while the parliament could grapple with the issue. They did not do that. Instead, they rushed to legalize euthanasia across the country, lethal injection euthanasia. They put in one minor little fudge. They said that the death must be reasonably foreseeable. Well, that's a meaningless limitation because, Dean, your death is reasonably foreseeable, as is mine. We don't know when, obviously, but it's reasonably foreseeable. But even that minor fudge has been subject to constitutional attack and litigation in Canada. I'm a lawyer, and having read the Supreme Court case of Canada, I don't even think the foreseeable death will stick because the Supreme Court specifically stated there was a charter right, like our Constitution, to euthanasia, and specifically stated that terminal illness has nothing to do with it, but it is the concept of suffering.
Are there people in Canada, I mean, whether that's the government or these hospitals or the people who run the hospitals, who have a financial stake in, or who benefit financially if people choose this kind of death, basically?
Well, Canada has a single-payer healthcare system. That is, the government funds all the healthcare in Canada. There is a very minor amount of private healthcare allowed. It's all government-funded. And so the entire society is expected to save many millions and millions of dollars if euthanasia becomes normalized. And already thousands of people have been killed by doctors in Canada in just a couple of years because, you know, some of these conditions, especially since they're not terminal, might be very expensive to cover. But if people decide to be dead, then of course that expense is saved. And what could be a cheaper, less expensive, quote, medical treatment, close quote, than giving somebody a lethal jab? All it takes is a couple of doctor visits, seeing what the diagnosis is, the patient saying, oh, my suffering's irremediable, I want to die, and killing them. That's very cheap. The other thing is, because it is a single-payer system, the province of Ontario has taken the position that doctors do not have the right to refuse to participate in euthanasia if they are approached by a legally eligible patient to be killed. So Ontario, the province, passed a law that said every doctor who is so approached must either kill the patient as requested or must engage in what is called an effective referral. An effective referral means that you will find a doctor, if you don't want to do the killing, who you know will be willing to do the killing. In other words, every doctor in Canada, or at least in the province of Ontario, has to be complicit in euthanasia as a cost of having a license, meaning there's no such thing as a conscientious objection, refusing to participate. So let's say you're a Catholic doctor and you think that euthanasia, the killing of an innocent human being, which is what it is a cardinal sin. Well, you have to do it, or you have to find a doctor who will do it, which means you're complicit. So some Catholic doctors and other doctors, even could be an atheistic, Hippocratic oath-believing doctor, filed a lawsuit saying this violates our freedom under the Charter. The Canadian Charter specifically protects, quote, freedom of conscience and religion. That is a specific protection in the Charter. It's stronger than our First Amendment protection of free exercise of religion because it not only protects freedom of religion, but it also protects freedom of conscience, specifically, explicitly. So some Catholic doctors and others brought a lawsuit saying our rights under the Charter, specifically enumerated rights, are being violated. The judge looked at that and said, you know what? You're right. Your rights are being violated. But the judge then said, however, because it's a single-payer healthcare system and everybody should have the right to, I think he called it, equal and equitable access to all legal forms of healthcare paid for by the government, which euthanasia is. So the patient is euthanized for free. That means that that right, which the judge conjured, it isn't in the Charter, prevails over the explicit right that is protected in the Charter, the right of conscience. And the judge told these doctors, if you don't want to euthanize patients, either find an area that you won't be asked to kill somebody or get out of medicine. So basically, the issue is to drive all Hippocratic oath believing, all Orthodox religious believing Catholics and others out of healthcare, all pro-lifers out of healthcare, so that the only doctors and nurse practitioners who will be able to practice medicine in Ontario are those who will be willing to help participate in the killing of patients. It's a very frightening thing. And to me, Dean, if you are forcing somebody to kill, to commit homicide, and you're not in the military following a legal order, which of course this isn't, then that's authoritarianism. To force people to take human life as a precondition of professional licensure, that's authoritarianism.
It's certainly all very alarming. What is it that impedes this trend from crossing the border into the United States?
Well, it's you know, that's a very important question because, you know, I've been debating against euthanasia and assisted suicide for 25 years. And when I bring up in debates what's happened in Belgium and the Netherlands, for example, organ harvesting conjoined with euthanasia of the mentally ill, that has taken place. I mean, that's as cruel as you get. That's taken place in Belgium and it's taken place in the Netherlands. And there's been one case in Canada of organ harvesting conjoined with euthanasia, although that patient was not mentally ill. That patient had a physical illness. Then the advocates for assisted suicide here will say, oh, well, that's Europe. That's nothing like the United States. That will never happen here. Well, when this kind of even more radical embrace of the culture of death, because Netherlands and Belgium don't force doctors to do anything. When that even more radical embrace of the culture of death, turning it from a legalized act to a positive right that you have a right to access, comes to Canada, which is our closest cultural cousin. I mean, we are as close to Canada culturally as two nations can be. In fact, if we hadn't lost the Battle of Quebec way back when, Canada might have become part of the United States. That's how close we are. Then I think we have cause to be concerned. What is keeping it from happening in the United States is that, unlike Canada so far, United States population has not overwhelmingly swallowed the hemlock. So there is still a contest here as to whether our people will accept the premise of euthanasia, that killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering. Six states have legalized assisted suicide, but scores of states over many years have repeatedly refused to do so. As long as the United States does not embrace this agenda wholeheartedly, that's probably not going to happen here. In fact, there have been attempts to expand the assisted suicide license in Oregon, just as an example. And advocates have said, no, no, don't do that yet because it'll hurt us in terms of legalizing it in other states, because it will prove that people like Smith are right, that we don't intend to keep it at this quote-unquote limited extent of legalization. But if we ever decide as a country, as a culture, yes, we want access to suicide on demand, in essence, or euthanasia, well, then the very things that are happening in Canada, the Netherlands, and Belgium will happen here, because it's a logical outcome of a mindset and a value system that says that eliminating suffering justifies eliminating the sufferer. And once you decide that killing is an acceptable medical treatment, then there's no way to keep that kind of, quote, treatment to the terminally ill, because many people suffer much more than people who are dying, nor will you be able to limit it to the competent, because incompetent people and children, of course, have access to healthcare as well as adults. And indeed, right now, Canada looks to be on the verge of getting ready to legalize euthanasia for children, which has already happened in Belgium, which has no age limits for euthanasia. There was recently a study reported by the government of Belgium that shows a 9-year-old child has been euthanized over there, an 11-year-old child. In the Netherlands, even though it's not technically legal, infanticide occurs. Doctors kill babies born with terminal conditions or serious disabilities. And in Canada, a couple of medical journal articles have shown that the pediatricians are beginning to get ready to euthanize children if it becomes legal. In fact, there was one hospital in Ontario, Canada, where they're already volunteering to do that. So once you accept this wolf into the hen house, if you will, there's no way to limit it. And the fact is, the United States has not yet fully opened the door. And until and unless we do, I think we'll be able to keep the worst of it at bay. But it's not for lack of trying on the part of the assisted suicide advocates who get tens of millions of dollars in George Soros money to try to promote this agenda.
Well, Wesley, thank you for all the good work you're doing on these issues and trying to help keep people aware. And thanks again for being on the show.
Dean, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
For ID the Future, I'm Dean Abbott.
In September 1906, nearly a quarter of a million people flocked to the Bronx Zoo in New York City. Many came for a startling new exhibit in the zoo's monkey house. But it wasn't a monkey they came to see. It was a man. His name was Oda Benga, from the African Congo. The riveting new documentary Human Zoos tells his story and shines a light on America's forgotten history of scientific racism. Oda Benga was one of thousands of human beings put on public display throughout America in the early 20th century. Often touted as evolutionary missing links between ape and man, these native peoples from around the world were harassed, demeaned, and jeered at, all with the enthusiastic support of the scientific community. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. Learn more at humanzoos.org or get the film at Amazon or Amazon Prime today.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.